You guys welcome Dr. Lowry back with us.
Thank you, and thank you for coming out on a Saturday morning. My leg is still attached, and I'm in good shape, I think. I did that people mover example last night, and I forgot I had a bad leg, and about halfway through it, I thought, whoa, I shouldn't have done that, but we're going to go about, I don't know, 40, 45 minutes, and then do your sessions, and then come back and do another session. And we're going to talk about the stages, just to remind you, a little review that we talked about last night, that war stage where the conflict happens. There's many reasons for that. We talked about your Adam suit. We talked about there's other things like personality differences. One of our best seminars we do is the Myers-Briggs Personality Inventory, where we talk about the difference between personalities, and hopefully by this time we've figured those out, but some people haven't. I would encourage you to do something like that to find out your different personalities. Penny and I are pretty much opposite on all those characteristics, but we've been able to figure out. You'll find out opposites, actually, if they can learn to communicate, make a better team than people who are just alike. So there's always strengths and weaknesses to certain situations. Kind of give you an idea of where you try to get to in terms of partnership with the dynamic. And let me just give you a personal example of that. My wife and I, of course, are totally different personality-wise. She's also better looking than I am. But she came from a totally different environment. Matter of fact, she was baptized after. She didn't grow up in a Christian home. We were baptized after, when we were engaged. Her dad was a brilliant scientist, engineer guy from upstate New York, and he had actually pulled the first switch on the first nuclear reactor in this country. You know, really smart, smart dude. Very quiet guy, and everything at her house was pretty much perfect. You know, perfect grammar, you know, perfect food, you know, from upstate New York, no gravy, no, you know, kind of stuff. And my family, I'm from, L.A., Lower Alabama. Anybody from Lower Alabama? Then we moved to UCLA, Upper Central Lower Alabama. Remember that? So that's my roots. My dad was a country preacher, went to college. I don't think he graduated from college, but went to college. And married my mom at age 16, all right? So my mom didn't graduate from high school. So I'm from L.A., grew up in that kind of situation, so we get married. Now, I got this little routine that I do where I show the difference between those kind of cultures. And I talk about my background, how poor, you know, I grew up so far back in the woods, rainbows and black and white. You know, that those... it's a long routine. I won't bore you with it. You know, we're so poor the lady next door had to have me. You know, those kind of things. She had four baths. I had four paths. And so I go through this long routine. But the final kind of line of the routine is, one year the bathroom caught on fire. And I'm supposed to say we were excited it didn't reach the house. You know, it's a joke. You know, it's a joke. We're married, and I'm speaking, you know, to lots of people. Matter of fact, we have this on video to like 10,000 people. I get to going in the routine, you know, and so I've said it 100 times probably. One year the bathroom caught on fire. We was excited it didn't reach the house. Well, when I say we was excited, my wife would just cringe, you know, and say, we was excited, you know. You're a PhD. Thousands of people are coming to hear you speak, and we was excited. We was, wasn't we? Now, these are the kind of things I'm talking about. See, I am a smart guy. Okay, I scored so high on the graduate record exam. The National Institute of Mental Health paid for all my doctoral program. You know. To become a psychologist. I'm a smart guy, but I'm from L.A., and And my mother didn't go to finish high school, so we was excited. But my wife was able to help me work on that. So I end up now, I'm very aware, you know, of saying those kind of words, especially in crowd. Now, it took a while. I mean, because it's me, you know. It's, you know, the bigger the crowd, the more energized I get, the more I get going. And I'd say it so many times. So we had to really work at those kind of things. And that's what I'm talking about. When you reach a point in your life, when a lot of the kids have gone, and the dogs, you can actually partner together to do so many things better than you could have done, especially if you're willing, especially us guys, drop that male ego, and that's the hard part, that defensiveness. So let me give you a couple of visuals that'll kind of help you, because for something like this, if you could just change one thing about your relationship, usually that makes all the difference in the world. And what happens is you just start to drift in the way you think, and you're not even aware you're doing certain things in relationships, because you just drifted there. You know, you got there. It's like the first time I went to the ocean. I've always loved the ocean. I'll be in Florida next week. I'll be in Ponte Vedra Beach, and with my leg, I don't know. I may not jump in the ocean, but I probably will. I just love the ocean. You know, people say, what about sharks? Well, if you hear the music, get out of the water, you know. But I like the ocean. But I can remember the first time my parents let me get in the water by myself with a friend. So we're with a friend, and we get in the water, and we're about 10 years old, and we're so excited. Man, we're big stuff. We're in the water riding the waves. Look at us, man. We're good. And then we look up after about 30 minutes, and we can't find our parents. I mean, they picked up the umbrellas and the towel. They're gone. I mean, and then finally, a half a mile down the beach, our parents, they have moved, picked up the towels and moved a half a mile. And we're thinking, they're trying to lose us, our own parents, you know. And then we look at the hotel we're staying in, and the hotel's moved a half a mile down the beach. And then we thought, wait a minute. Hotels can't move. We moved, we drifted, and we didn't even realize it. And that's what happens in the way you think. That's why the Bible talks about renewing your mind daily. You will drift, by the way, toward isolation. You have to grow toward intimacy in order to do that. So let me give you a couple of visuals so you can understand. Because here's what happens to most people. You go to church, you hear a general sermon about general things, and in general, you generally decide you're generally going to do generally better than what you generally did before you generally came in here, and generally you go out there and generally you don't do anything any different. I promise you. Most Christians just, they go to church, they park the same place, sit in the same place, do the same things, and talk to the same people, and do nothing differently. I mean, and they go to Sunday school, you know, which is the only school ever in existence that's ever been created where you never graduate, and you to do anything, really. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. And so in the business world, I say it this way: you've got to get specific in order to get terrific. In a sense, you've wasted the whole weekend if you don't do one thing differently by coming here today. So what would that one thing be? Let me give you some visuals. Let's just say maybe we're going to watch a game. Let's have a party, grill some steaks, watch a game. Everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's having fun. Maybe watch a Cowboy game. I live in Dallas. I'm a huge Cowboy fan. They're actually going to be pallbearers at my funeral so they can let me down one last time. Maybe watch a Cowboy game, all right? So hey, everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's doing fine. And the grill's getting good and hot, just about to put the steaks on, and a friend of ours walks in. Let's just call him Bill. We wave at Bill, and Bill waves at us. Hey, Bill, how's it going? And then Bill puts his hand on the grill and burns himself severely. We go, whoa, did you see Bill do that? That's weird. Man, they take him to the hospital. It's a good burn. They bandage him up. They salve him up. Call about a week later, man, yeah, I had a good burn, but then, you know, they've taken the bandages off. Just got to put salve on it every day, you know. And about, you know, a month later, he don't even have to put salve on it. It's about 5 weeks later, you know. Go have another cookout, grill some steaks, watch a game. Everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's having fun. You know, going to grill some steaks. Grill's good and hot. And Bill walks in. I mean, he's by the grill, you know, and everybody's kind of looking over there. And, you know, do you say anything, you know, because we're Christians and better to look good than tell the truth, right? You know, so you don't say, get away from the grill, Bill. Remember what happened last time, you know, so nobody does anything, you know. And what does he do? He puts his hand on the grill again and burns himself severely. You and I just standing around talking, it may go something like this. That Bill, he's a nice guy, isn't he? My kids, his kids, same soccer team. I see him every Saturday. He seems pretty normal just about every area of his life. But when it comes to grills, that Bill's nuts, isn't he? He nuts. Man, you see what he did? He nuts. Let me tell you about your life. You're pretty normal in just about every area we can think about. But I guarantee you, there's one area. We look at it really close. We'd say, that's just nuts. I mean, why do you get mad about that? Or why do you get defensive about that? Or why do you eat that or smoke that or drink that? We don't have time to do individual therapy. You understand? You got to kind of put in your own blank here. But I guarantee you there's one thing that burns you over and over again, and it keeps you from having the great relationships that God wants you to have. And it's keeping you going to have the great relationships for the rest of your life. I don't know what it is, but it burns you over and over. It's kind of like, I know all the old psychiatrist jokes. Remember the old psychiatrist joke where the guy goes to see the psychiatrist, he's got two burned ears? Well, I'll tell you, he got two burned ears. Psychiatrist says, what happened? He said, well, I was ironing. The phone rang and picked up the iron. He says, yeah, but both your ears are burned. He said, they call back. Well, see, that's what your habits do. You say you're not going to do it or eat it or get mad about it or defensive about it, but then it becomes a habit, you see. Matter of fact, there's not a very pretty verse, but there's a verse in Proverbs that says, like a dog returns to its vomit. You mean you don't even want to do it or say it or whatever, but you do it, you see. You might have heard about this pastor. He bought a used lawnmower from a neighborhood kid, just, you know, trying to make friends, but needed a lawnmower, $45. So he buys the lawnmower. He can't get it start. I mean, he cannot get the lawnmower to start. He's getting frustrated with this lawnmower. And the more he's getting, it's just not working. Finally, a week later, runs into the kids. The kid, come here, look at this. This lawnmower you sold me does not start. You cheated me. He said, Pastor, it does not. Look, this, Pastor, calm down. It does not. It's starting. The pastor, just calm down. I'm going to tell you. I didn't want to tell you, but I have to. I needed the money. You had the money, and I sold you this lawnmower, but I shouldn't have it, but it will start. He said, but it's just always been weird. I didn't want to tell you because you're the pastor. It doesn't start unless you cuss. I mean, that's just the way it's always been. You're the pastor, and I didn't want to tell you. He said, well, I am the pastor, young man, and I do not cuss. Matter of fact, it's been so long since I cussed, I don't even remember. And the little kid said, pull it about 3 or 4 more times. It'll all come back. Well, that's the way it is with your habits. You say you're not going to do it or whatever, you know, and your mate pulls on you, or your kids pull on you, or your grandkids, and it all comes back. In fact, it's that Adam suit, in a way, is a lot like a dog. Remember, like a dog returns to the vomit? It's, you have to control it. Kind of like a dog. Ever been to somebody's house where the dog controlled the house? I mean, you're on the porch and the dog is licking you and getting on your leg and you're thinking, get away from me, dog, you know, and you're ringing the doorbell saying, save me from this dog, you know. And then the people come, but they don't save you from the dog. The dog goes in with you, you know, and run, you know, licking you and still, you know, and you sit and you're trying to eat, and the dog's trying to get your food, you're trying to get the, you know, get the dog away. And then the people always say this, is the dog bothering you? One time I'd like to say, is this a C&I dog? Because evidently you're totally blind. Yes, the dog's bothering me. And then they say something, well, that's how the dog shows affection. I'm thinking, get the dog out of here. I've been to people's houses. They have a dog, but they control the dog. They tell it when to sit. They tell it when to get. And it's a pretty reasonable existence. That's the way it is with your adversary. You better learn to control it. A matter of fact, marriage really is a creation by God to help control your Adam suit. You ever wonder why there's not going to be marriage in heaven? Because you don't have this Adam suit you got to deal with anymore. God's going to kill it to get you into heaven. So you won't need all those controls and difficulties. But marriage is one way, especially for men, to control your Adam suit and your sex drive. I mean, Genesis chapter 3, God said, hey, it ain't going to work unless we have a naked woman. I mean, that's just the way it, you know. Three chapters, he said, hey, we got to do this, you know. And so then we got to figure out, well, how are we going to control that? You know, we better set up some kind of constraints, some way of letting your Adam suit not get what it wants all the time, because that's how the world destroys you. You see, it's a Ponzi scheme saying you can have this without that, or you can have pleasure without consequences. And the problem is, matter of fact, I wouldn't have to go around the country telling people how to live. The problem is you can have it for a short period of time. Penny and I were in Mobile, Alabama, just about to close the curtain on the hotel room. You know, all those big curtains on the hotels, when down the road, the hot light on the Krispy Kreme comes on. I mean, just like a sign from God, like, boom, you know? So I told Penny, look, the hot light, a sign from God, you know? Let's get some exercise and walk down to the Krispy Kreme. I'm going to teach you a word, and this is a word that your Adam suit uses all the time. The word is rationalize, but remember, let's break it up like we did psychological into rational lies. You see, you rationalize to yourself what your Adam suit wants. It's what you always do, you know. Got to have it. Got it. Remember last night, Esau, got to have it. See? So, honey, let's get some exercise and walk down to the Krispy Kreme. You know, another irrational lie, but it makes you feel better. You know, we can get some exercise and walk down there. We get to the Krispy Kreme, and they're cheaper by the dozen. We will now save money if we get 12. Who doesn't need to save money? And that's when I realized I could eat 8 Krispy Kreme donuts by myself. I mean, they're just hot fried sugar. It just melts in your mouth. No consequences whatsoever. Just pure pleasure. I mean, just didn't have to change my britches or my belt or anything. Just pure pleasure. The problem is, remember, once you have it, then it has you. If you do that regularly, you're going to get on the scale that may say one at a time, please, because you're going to get big, you understand? I wouldn't have to go around the country telling people how to live if things happened immediately. And they'd figure it out. I mean, if you went to Krispy Kreme and took a bite of Krispy Kreme and fat went, boop, you'd go, good night. Did you see that fat jump out of that donut? That is a powerful donut. I'm not getting close to those donuts. Doesn't work that way. First you have it, then it has you. So we have to learn to control this Adam suit. And matter of fact, success in life, not just marriage, success in life is learning how to control that Adam suit. Matter of fact, we did have a coach one time at the Cowboys called Tom Landry. Remember what Tom Landry said? My job as a coach is to make guys do what they do not want to do in order to accomplish what they've dreamed of doing all their lives. That's just not the job of a coach. That's the job of a teacher. That's the job of a pastor. That's the job of a parent. In fact, that's your job. Your job is to make your Adam suit do what it does not want to do in order to accomplish what you dreamed of doing all your lives. And it's the key to success down here. Remember, it's not going to get you into heaven. But the more you can redeem your Adam suit down here, the better marriage you're going to have, the better life you're going to have, the better kids you're going to have. Because they'll see that this is the key element of success in life. Because change is hard. You got to get specific. Remember, to get terrific, you got to have a behavioral cue to let you know I can change or I need to change something. For example, if you're going to change something at church, when you came to church, you would park in a totally different location. Most of you pretty much park in the same location when you come to church and do the same things, talk to the same people, you know, and do nothing when you leave. Okay, so I understand that. So if you go into change, if you park on the left side, you would go to the right side of the building, and then you would shock your subconscious. All of a sudden, you would go, whoa, what am I doing on this side of the building? And then you can make a behavioral change. Then you could be, you would shock your subconscious, so you would consciously do something differently. And it may be, I'm going to meet a new person today. I'm going to smile today. I'm going to remember one thing from the sermon today. I'm going to do something different and put that into practice this week. You see, most of your life is lived subconsciously, and the problem is you drift in the way you think. You end up having a mediocre life and a mediocre marriage, and then you look back when it's all over and realize, man, what happened? Most people live their life by distraction instead of direction. It's like going to the grocery store. I go to the grocery store. I know what I'm supposed to get, grapes, bananas, milk. And now my wife says I need fiber at my age, which actually I guess I do. I'm going to make they say I'll live 5 years longer. Of course, 4 years will be in the bathroom. But I don't know if that trade-off's any good or not. But I know what I'm supposed to get when I go to the grocery store. But when I get there, there's Twinkies and ding-dongs and ice cream and Snickers and all kind of stuff. And if I'm not careful, I'll get to checkout and realize I wasted a lot of time, spent a lot of money on stuff I really didn't want or need in the first place. And that's the way it is with life. If you're not careful, you'll get to checkout, look back and realize you wasted a lot of time, spent a lot of money on stuff you really didn't want or need in the first place. So when you go to the grocery store, I got to have a list. But not only do I have to have a list, I have to have Penny with me to keep me on the list. That's what marriage can be at this stage of your life. You can be partners holding each other accountable to be the people that God created them to be. Because I promise you, change is extremely hard. It's extremely hard. Why? Because now you're operating on the conscious level instead of the unconscious level. That's why people give up on change. That's why churches don't change. So let me give you an example of how hard change is. Let's just say that I'm going to take a trip today. Let's just say I go to Bossier City, Louisiana, to see my brother Fred, okay? How far is Bossier? This from here, it's just like an hour and a half. I could have a burger with my brother. I could come back here. I wouldn't be tired. Why? I'm a driver. I don't think about it. I don't think about putting my seatbelt on. I don't think about putting it in the gear. I don't think about any of that. Matter of fact, Penny and I drive, we listen to murder mysteries, you know, people killing people. Because, you know, I've been in church work all my life, and you couldn't do that. And so that kind of appeals to me. And so it's unconscious. I'm a driver, you know. I don't have to think about it. It wouldn't tire me out at all. Let's take that same trip, same amount of miles. Matter of fact, let's cut the miles in half. You know, let's say you only go 40 miles outside of a town. This time, I'd be totally exhausted. And the reason is this. The town is London, England. And they drive on the different side of the road. So now all of my unconscious behavior becomes conscious behavior. So I have to think about it the whole time. Oh, no. Here comes a truck. It's on the wrong side of the road. But I'm on the wrong side of the road. I got to stay over here. I'm going to die. You know, you'd be totally exhausted. Why? Because it's all conscious behavior. Every time you make a change, it has to be conscious behavior for a long period of time. And that's why people get exhausted. There's only so much mental, spiritual, psychological energy in order to do that. So who would be the person that could make a change? Who would be the person that would be able to drive on a different side of the road, what I call the wrong side of the road, a different side of the road? It would be the person that gets transferred to London, England in their job, and they have to drive to work every day to support their family. And here's the reason. They would become a wrong side of the road driver because they have no choice. Most people do not change until they have no choice. I've worked with alcoholics who could not quit drinking. And they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, your liver's damaged, and you're going to die if you drink again. And the people who could not drink quit drinking. Now, some even then can't. I promise you, they can't. Even then they can't. But a lot of them can, who could not quit until they had no choice. Smokers who cannot quit smoking. They go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you got lung cancer. You smoke, you're going to die. And they quit. Some even then. But most people, the only time they change is when they have no. I've worked with people in marriages, and the guy cannot change. And the wife says, I'm done. And she leaves him. And the guy who could not change, all of a sudden, is able to change. Most people do not change until they have no choice. Most churches do not change until they have no choice. But let me tell you, the successful people in this world, successful churches in this world, successful marriage in this world, change before they have to. Matter of fact, most successful people change all the time. They're constantly growing, partnering, changing what they do. Now, if you had to predict the person that could become a wrong side of the road driver, not given the fact that they have a job and have to work every day, what other factors would lead to that change? It would be the person who could also have another person in the car with them, so they could have, in a sense, an encourager, somebody to say, man, you are doing so good, man. That truck came and you stayed over here and we're alive. Let's stop at 7-Eleven and get a big cup and celebrate. You are doing so good. You know, that would be a person who may become a wrong side of the road driver. And that's what research tells us. Matter of fact, alone is one of the scariest words in the entire vocabulary. Marriage is partnering. It's somebody in the car with you that can help you drive down the wrong side of the road. Because I promise you, success in life is getting your Adam suit to do what it does not want to do in order to accomplish what you've dreamed of doing all your lives. See? Now, what you have to also find out is, how do I reward that Adam suit for doing what it does not want to do? And that's you also have to figure out too, to figure out with partnerships and those kind of things. All I do is speak and eat. That's pretty much my life, you know. And by the way, what a great meal last night. I do a lot of church banquets. I eat a lot of rubber chicken. Man, the meal was really good last night, wasn't it? You got a unique church. Best meal I've had at a church in a long time. Just want to thank you that. Church food's... I won't go into that. I try to be a very positive person. But what we have to understand is that we all have our habits. We all have difficulties that we struggle with. So for me, it's my weight, because that's all I do is I speak and eat, and people give me free food. I grew up poor. Free food's hard to turn down. You know, that's in every stop. It's more free food. You know, they put, and your church too, put a welcome basket in my hotel room, but they were kind. They called and said, you know, what would he like? And so there was some healthy stuff in there. I promise you, I go to churches, I get to a hotel room, and I'm there one night, and there's like 8 Snicker bars, you know, in a basket, and I'm there one night. Now, you would think, well, you're a man of God. You can handle Snicker bars. No, I cannot. I got the same Adam suit you got, you know. 10 o'clock at night by myself in a hotel room, Snickers always win. I mean, that just do. You know, I can pray and read the Bible, but it becomes a blessing. Thank you, God, for these Snickers. You know, you can't do it. You know, so you got to have some kind of plan in order to do that. All right, and that's how you partner. You know, you partner with your wife in order to hold each other accountable for these kinds of things. And you got to have some kind of reward. I'm a golfer. Matter of fact, I was going to try to play golf here on Friday, and my leg, I couldn't do it. But because of where I travel and what I get to do, I get to play a lot of nice golf courses. And so I usually have some golf course out there that I'm going to get to play, and I put a reward based on how much weight I've gained or lost. You know, right now I'm actually on a three-week diet, and I've lost like 21 days. And so it's not going well. But one reason right now I don't have a goal in my mind, I've got to go back and reprogram and come up with what's the next goal and what's my reward for doing that. For example, I get to play a lot of nice courses. I got to play Augusta. And you guys know Augusta. That's the biggie. You know, everybody wants to play Augusta. So when I knew I was going to play that, that's one of my dreams. That's what I get to do. So that can motivate my Adam suit, get it to do what it does not want to do. So I had a visual. Remember, vision goals. Without a vision, you'll perish. You got to have a visual out there of what will happen if you do what you do not want to do. So my visual was, if I showed up at Augusta weighing 185, I get a new driver. One week before, because I wanted to practice my driver. 1 week before Augusta, I weigh 185, I get a new driver, okay? Now, that means that's another, and the vision is a picture. It puts another picture in your mind. So if I go to this church or whatever, and they ask me, and they give me Snicker, you know, a welcome basket with 8 Snicker bars, then I can just step back in my mind, and I can form another vision, another picture of me playing Augusta weighing 185 with a new driver, okay? Then I can take those Snickers and hand them out to the hotel people. Here, have a Snicker. Good, you know, thanks, have a Snicker. You know, why? Because now that purpose is bigger than the pleasure, see? I have something bigger, and I can handle the Adam suit here. And that's what you have to do with your life. Otherwise, your Adam suit wins every time. That's why without a vision, you will perish, because the brain can only have one thought at a time, right? You could, in a sense, there's no such thing as self-control. You cannot not do anything. The more you try not to do it, the more you want to do it. Why? Because you cannot get the picture out of your mind, you know. So you try not to eat chocolate, you eat chocolate because you're trying not to eat chocolate. You got to put another picture in its place in order to do that. So success in life is rearranging those things and having a partner hold you accountable to get those things done. Okay, so that took forever. That was just the introduction of what we're going to talk about, marriage, but I am on medication. So what time am I supposed to stop in this session? What? Okay, I got 5 minutes. I got 5 minutes. Well, I'm going to just wrap this up. Let me wrap this up then. What I want to do now is to shift gears and give you some spiritual things to think about, the difference between men and women. And then we'll come back. And in the next session, I do have to teach men how to listen. I know that. So let me just give you one thing about men, to appreciate men. So you came this morning. The male ego is an incredible, strange thing. Men are just 10-year-old boys grown up. That's all they are. You know, what do 10-year-old boys do? They do tricks for their mother. Watch them. You know, watch a 10-year-old boy. Watch me, feel my muscles. Aren't I big? Aren't I strong? Aren't I fantastic? Then watch me hit this ball. Watch me do this. You know, feel my muscles. Aren't I great? Aren't I fantastic? You know, that's what 10-year-old boys do. They want to impress their moms. And it works. You know, I'm about 16 or 17, and then the mom becomes a nag. You know, because the boy says, I made the team. Yeah, but your room's a mess. You got to go clean up that room. Yeah, but yet I made the team. Yeah, but your room's a mess. You go clean up. Yeah, but you made a D in algebra. Yeah, but mom, I'm in a scoop. Yeah, no, you know, and just, you know, and all of that, that where she used to say, you know, you were in the school play and you were the very best. I mean, you were the best in the whole play. How you stood there and you were that tree and you never moved. You were so good, you know, and he thrives on that. But now, her room's not clean, not doing that. So he starts looking for another woman. Come here, feel my muscles, aren't I wonderful, aren't I fantastic? And what does she say? Oh, yes, you are. You're so cute, you're so strong, and you're the best on the team. I don't know why the coach doesn't play you. He thrives on that. And he says, Mama, I'm going with her. Why? Because he's a 10-year-old boy grown up. He wants to hear that he's the best. He's fantastic. He's cute. He thrives on that. But if you're not careful, you become like that other woman. He says, yeah, I did this and I did that. Yeah, but you supposed to do that and you didn't take out the trash. Yeah, but I did that. Yeah, but you didn't. And he starts looking for another woman. In fact, it usually happens at work. And he can't figure out that he's paying these people to say good things about him. But now he wants to stay at work more than he wants to go home. Why? Because at work they feel his muscles and tell him how wonderful he is. I've worked with guys who run multi-million dollar companies, make multi-million dollar decisions, but they come home and they can't decide where to go eat dinner. Why? Because at work, it's a great idea. And at home, it's, we ate there last week. Okay? So a boy, a man, is a 10-year-old boy grown up. So the best word you can ever use with your husband, no matter what age, great idea. Great idea. See, most of the things that you do, it doesn't matter anyway. I mean, where you ate last Tuesday, you don't even remember. So when he comes up with it, just look him in the eyes. Great idea. You say, well, it's not a great idea. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. A 10-year-old, just think about a 10-year-old boy. They do some stupid stuff, and you tell them, great idea. Man, you did so good. Why? Because he's a 10-year-old boy. That's why. Well, the man, he's a 10-year-old boy grown up. He'll do anything for an attractive woman. You put an attractive woman by that door back there, with a big box. Every man goes out there, you'd look at, let her bat her eyes and say, could you pick up this box? Every man here will pick his box up. And, you know, I mean, he won't be able to get out of bed in the morning, but he'd pick that box. Why? Because that's the way God made him. He He thrives on that. He thrives on that. Great idea. 10-year-old boy. You say, well, does that work? Well, 1 Peter chapter 3, the word submissive, it really means doing what Jesus did. Everything in the Bible, by the way, interpret in terms of Jesus. It'll keep you balanced. You can get so unbalanced in the Christian life. Keep balanced by Jesus. Jesus was submissive. We're all submissive. I'm submissive to your pastor. Now I'm submissive. Pastor had to go. I'm submissive to the executive pastor. Now I stop. I ask him when I stop, when I go. When I, you know, why? Because he's over me. You know, is he smarter than me? I doubt. But he's over me. I'm going to do what he says. You know, and that's the way it is with submission. But really, Jesus was the ultimate submission to God the Father. But what he really did, he went around telling people how good God was. That's what he did. You know, went around telling people how good God was. Matter of fact, he would always say it like this. You think God's like this? He's really like this. Now, why would he say it that way? You think God's like this? He's really like this. He's so good that even if he had a kid that lived with the pigs, God's so good, he would run to that kid and kiss him and throw a party. That's how good God is. Now, why would he say it like that? You think he's like this? Only thing they have was the Old Testament. You ever read the Old Testament? I mean, God wiped out some folks, didn't he? Remember those Ammonites and Midianites, Mosquito Bites, Gazuntites, Samsonites? I mean, if you're an ite, you're done. I mean, I wish he got the termites. I mean, how'd he miss the termites? You know, I don't know. You know. So that's what he said. You think he's like this. Matter of fact, if you look at the Old Testament, the word Father's not in there very much, folks. And when it is, it's very impersonal, the Father of many nations. But the word fear is in there a lot. Fear. But you flip to the New Testament, the word Father's in there a lot. And now it's imminent. It's intimate with the word Abba, Aramaic daddy. This impersonal God, because of Jesus Christ, becomes your daddy. And now the word fear not starts to appear. And once you start to understand that, then you too can go around telling people how good other people are. Because God says, when you do that, I will bless you the way you bless others.